So this is what happens in Texas when the water freezes and you try to drip your faucets.
Fucking room! Oh my freaking... How do I do... What the fuck? What do I do? Oh my fucking god! Oh.
Bro, look at this fucking snow. My shoe.
No!
You're dead ass right now. Are you?
And there we are, a week later. And by the way, I did that with my shoe as well, so I can relate to that situation. Actually, what happened was I tried to step out of the house in that with my house shoes on, just to see how unprepared in Texas we are. I tried to walk out in that in my house shoes, thinking that I was going to get away with that. And I quickly caught on that that was not a good idea. Rough week for us here in Texas last week, a weird week, the snowpocalypse of 2021. I couldn't watch any more of that. I lived it. I don't want to see that again. And I couldn't think of a better guest to have in studio after a week like that than someone to bring us some inspiration. And that person would be this gentleman over here to my, I think, depending on what your perspective is, left or to my right. Kenyon Salo, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the top keynote speakers and trainers in the field of inspiration. So who better to bring in for us Texans after that week? And this is a man that's lived in Texas also, but now he's in Colorado for a number of years. So that weather, he would have been easily prepared, but we had, of course, all our issues with the power outages and the water being out. It was a rough week. So we need someone to bring in some inspiration. He's one of only five members, also, speaking of Denver, of the Denver Broncos Thunderstorm skydive team. I'm super excited to have Kenyon in here. He's an old comrade of mine. He's a great guy, and we're going to talk about what he's doing as a inspirational speaker. We're going to also talk about what he does he's a real life action hero. This guy jumps off mountains. And he did some stand-up comedy too. So he's been in entertainment. I want to ask him about that, because that's something I did not know about you that I learned from doing research for this show, that you had done some stand-up comedy, and something I have a little interest in. And also bucket list, which you know something about. It's on my bucket list to go back and do stand-up comedy in the future. So, perfect. So, Kenyon, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Thunderpop Dome. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty phenomenal. This is so awesome to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me. Like, this is killer. Like, I've done a lot of podcasts, but this one is something that I was really, really looking forward to. It's so creative. Man. It's so amazing. I'm pretty fired up to be here.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you. I'm working on it. Oh, we're not ready for that yet. We're ready for this.
Coming up on Thunder Pop.
Yes. So I set some of it up already. Also, we're going to talk about some of Kenyon's favorite shows. He's a big Stranger Things fan. I've been reading about Stranger Things season 4. I'll have a question to agree or disagree for him about Stranger Things season 4 to see his take on it. He watches Narcos over there on Netflix, which is a phenomenal show. I'm going to pitch an idea for a potential spinoff to Narcos, and they've already had one spinoff, another possible spinoff. And you know, Netflix needs content to compete in the streaming wars in 2021. So I'm going to pitch an idea to him about Narcos and see what he thinks about that. And I got to just set it up here. Here's a little demo from your demo reel.
Exciting.
Very motivational.
Absolute energy.
Are you ready?
If you ever feel stuck and you need to get going, you create an experience. You say yes and let the how figure itself out later. You see, what happens is you do what most can't, so you can have what most won't. How many of you are uncomfortable right now? Raise your hand.
I'm the one on the ladder.
There it is. That's great. So all that on this show, we'll go ahead and do our opening. And then I'm really excited to talk about, we need some inspiration. I'm really excited to talk about all that stuff that we just showed and talked about right after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, I lied.
Thunderpop! 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 Oh, Thunderpop!
Yeah! Yeah. When we did just an audio podcast, after I would run the music, I would go, yeah, yeah, and I would come in like that on every show. But I noticed when we started doing the video version, that didn't play the same. It's weird how video to audio play different. It would come off. So I had to change the way it sounds to where, because it sounded like I was just yelling. It didn't sound like I was saying yeah on the video for some reason. I don't know why. So I had to start doing different variations of it to find a better yeah that worked with video. I don't know. Go figure. It's weird. But anyway, yeah. I'm still playing around with that. I'm so happy to have you here, Kenyon. And thank you for your kind words. And it's an honor to have you here. I know you could be doing a lot of things right now, and you are doing a lot of things right now. So I'm glad you found some time to come on and join us here in the Dome.
Well, for sure, Steven. And you know what, that intro is so bomber. Like, dang, I was like watching that. I was just like getting chills. I was like, yeah, I'm on the show. This is happening right now. Like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, as a kid growing up, I'm obsessed with opening intros of shows and movies. Almost to the point, you know, people that are really into music and I know you love, music. That's you as well. That love the covers, how important it is to them. The artwork of a vinyl or of a CD, a jacket, the jacket and the artwork. And they want to have that, you know, we're in a digital age now, obviously, where people just stream, they download whatever they want. They just get it. It's at the fingertips. Anytime they could even voice it, say, you know, Alexa, play Rolling Stones, whatever, is there at a drop of the hat. But there's people that still love that hard copy of the music. Like, they want that jacket. They want the artwork. They want to be able to pull out the book. And it kind of came back to a certain extent with vinyl. Well, it has come back really in a big way with vinyl. But for me, I'm really big into intros and theme songs to movies and TV shows. And I've actually, my son's only 3.5 years old, but we talk about that all the time because he's watching, obviously, the kids' shows that he's watching. And we'll talk about the theme songs to the shows he likes. That's how obsessed I am with it. So it was really important to me to have something kind of fun with this show, same way with the music and the intro. But that's one of the things when it started shifting in television and movies to these really quick intros, you know, like where there's just a couple of seconds of maybe a song and then the name of the show. And then that's it. I was like, man, that's why I like Stranger Things so much. Cause Stranger Things is one of the shows, and Mandalorian also, that does have a little bit of an intro, and they do play some theme music for you, especially Stranger Things. It gives you a nice little beginning of the show and kind of a little bit of an intro. Some shows, though, it's just boom, that's it, we're in the show, that's it, no time for intros nowadays. Well, and
I think that's applicable, especially with Stranger Things, because it does take you back to the 80s when that was the case, when you would get that CD or tapes. Like, for me, I remember tapes. That was the first thing where, like, having to rewind the tape that came out, like, with a pencil and go into the cassette, and because you had this, like, truly amazing tape, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't let this thing break, and you would do surgery on your music. There's no surgery anymore, but for sure, it was about the covers, the cover art, the intro. Every single television show I grew up on, it was about the intro. And I'll watch movies and I'll see how they do the intros and see how creative they get in terms of the artwork or how they're intertwining the words or the scripting or any of that stuff. And I saw that, I saw a movie recently. I rewatched a movie, Catch Me If You Can, with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And just the way they're using the words and they're intertwining everything in the opening. And it was one of the classic openings where they used to actually have all of the people that played the roles. So it was mm-hmm. the directors and the artists and the clothing designer and all the way down to craft services practically in the opening of the movie. And they kind of did a throwback to that. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I've been watching WandaVision. There's a lot of people have been watching WandaVision, the last Marvel show, last month and a half or 2 months. And they, since they were doing a retro theme where each week was set in a different decade, they would customize the opening to whatever decade they were in. So they started with the 50s sitcom and they had a 50s sitcom authentic opening. So I've loved that. I've been eating that up. And some people that were kind of just sort of not digging the 1950s theme wanted just the action and them to get into the action, but I was eating up the 50s sitcom theme. Okay. I want to ask you, I showed a little, I like to call them sizzle reels just because I like to use that term.
Oh, that's exactly what that is sizzle reel.
Sizzle reels. Yeah. And for me, I just like to say the word sizzle reel. Sizzle reel, sizzle reel.
It's better than just straight demo reel.
Yeah, it's so much more, exciting.
Sometimes we call it the hype reel, you know,
like hype sizzle, the hype
reel.
I'll take that. That's a close second. By the way, I owe you an applause.
Oh, thank you. No, seriously, stop.
For coming in. Okay, there you go. Coming in there. Encore. We were looking at your sizzle reel, hype reel, never demo reel, but the ladder.
Yeah.
I was watching it this week as I was going back and watching some of your videos and clips, which I enjoyed and they're great. Your content's great. By the way, where can people find, Kenyon Salo? Where do they need to go if they want to find your work?
Kenyon Salo on all platforms. I mean, KenyonSalo.com is a great place to start from there. Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and, you know, all the things. Kenyon, LinkedIn, all the things. KenyonSalo.com. Because it's easy, right? There's only like one other Kenyon Salo in the entire world. And that guy has zero desire to be on the internets. So I got lucky. I was able to pick up all the properties and keep it simple.
Now, this is funny, off subject. We improvise a lot here, as you can tell.
I love it. That's my life right there. My life is improvise. That is my life.
It is. I've seen your tape. As they say in sports, I've seen the tape. So I saw the ladder there. You were doing the ladder, which is, I saw the ladder. It looks pretty tall. Have you ever, I guess that's easy for you when you're skydiving into the Denver Broncos stadium, standing on a tall ladder is no big deal.
I mean, it's in my wheelhouse for sure, but it's so powerful for the audiences because we've always been told don't stand on the top step. And people don't like it when people go to the edge of something or do something that they might witness. I mean, it's kind of this juxtaposition because why do we watch NASCAR? Because we love the crashes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, people don't want to see people get hurt. And so that last step of me just standing on the ladder is a pretty big deal. Like it's big. And then I get up there and I remember I did one of those. It was in front of 3,500 high school kids at Colorado DECA. And the stage was already 5 feet. I had a 12-foot ladder and then you throw me on top there. So I'm like 25 feet up in the air. And I remember they blasted me with the house lights. They boom, the lights from the direct spotlights. And I couldn't see anything. I need to see something to get my visual for balance. And there was a little piece of carpet. That's all I could see. It was 3,500 people, but all I could see was a little piece of carpet. Mm-hmm. But I pulled it off and stood up there. And no, never. I've never taken a fall. I don't imagine I'd walk away from one very well. And I'm not up there for very long, but it causes this visceral reaction and people, they get nervous and they sweat or they tense up, and it's exactly what I want when I'm doing that training.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it gets their attention. First of all, you're trying to make sure they're awake. People are coming in. Maybe they traveled from somewhere and they've been tired or whatever. So you need something kind of boom.
Right there.
You have such high energy too. I see you running back and forth. Now I know, because I've DJed on these stages, some of these stages that are in some of these conference centers, surprisingly shaky. Some of the stages, the ones that are like
guaranteed. Yeah.
Like the mobile ones, the ones that are set up kind of on the, they're bringing them from a back room somewhere. A crew brings them in from a back room somewhere and they set them up kind of shaky.
Always. Sometimes I have to find the perfect spot for that ladder. And obviously that's during the AV test. Mm-hmm. But yes, I've been on some shaky ladders. I've been on some shaky stages. And I think it just adds more to it, because people see it. Like if I'm like, whoa, and try and catch my balance, people know that I'm not faking that. That in that moment, I was like, mm-hmm. Whoa. So it happens all the time. I actually got to be today. We did a recording, because the virtual world. So I can't do the ladder piece when I do virtual presentations in my home studio office. There's just no room for it. The ceiling's not high enough. It doesn't fit. But we had a client call and said, look, we want a 1-hour recording of your keynote. And I was like, oh, really? And so we did it today where we went to the airplane hangar and I did it in front of the Twin Otter, which is our big airplane, holds 23 people. And that was awesome.
Great. It's amazing. I took this photo. This is off a radio promo that you were in Colorado. I loved it. Yeah. Being a Star Wars fan.
Yeah. I love that.
A lot of people say Solo, don't they? When they say your last name, you get that sometimes?
Solo, mm-hmm. Like all the things. I wanted to name my kid. I wanted to name my firstborn Eli. I wanted to name him Han. So his name would be Han Solo. I was like, come on, let's do it.
Oh, man. Best.
Of course. And it didn't end up. He ended up being Eli.
Eli's a good name. Yeah. I loved Eli. I found out my name was almost Eli. My dad wanted to name me Eli, but my mom wouldn't go for it.
Damn, that's pretty close.
Yeah, and then I tried to bring it back when we named my son. Was to say, hey, this is another chance for Eli. But no, I love the name Eli. So you're running back and forth on stage at such high energy, and it's just it gets me excited. It gets my energy up, and I know it must be the same for the people in the audience when they're seeing that. Just before the pandemic, you had went in front of your biggest audience ever. Is that correct? You made your
8,000 people in Australia,
down in Sydney.
Yeah. It was, I've been in larger crowds, but this is the first time I did my keynote in front of that large crowd. I got to open up this huge event, MDRT, Million Dollar Roundtable. And it's like one of the crown jewels in terms of speaking. If you get to speak at MDRT, you've made it, because they have thousands of people that apply. And then they break it down to 800 and then 400 and 200. And then they test the speakers, the top 50 speakers, in front of multiple languages, because this was translated between 19 languages live. And so they test it to see if the speaker's going to do well. And then they break it down, and eventually they're down to like 12 for the actual event.
Wow.
So true honor for sure.
Well, that's great. What fun. Then a month later, things change real quick. You're used to traveling around and speaking in front of large groups. And then suddenly a pandemic comes around.
I had been watching it and following it early on when it was first in China, and I was watching on Twitter, and of course nobody's talking about it over here. And I was like, no, this is happening. This is crazy. Hope it doesn't come here. And it wasn't a sky is falling. It was more or less just like watching to figure out how was I going to adjust? How was I going to adjust accordingly based on all this that was happening? And sure enough, and that was it. March 8th of last year was my last onstage event.
Wow.
That was it.
I want to get back. When we get back on that here in a little bit, I want to ask you about when you think you'll be able to go back to it. But you've been staying busy. You built a studio, as we see in your house there, a state-of-the-art studio. And I want to talk to you about that as well. We're going to do a Thunder Take here in a moment. And at the close of the show, we'll have our usual tropes. We're going to have agree or disagree and thoughts and advice on this 140th episode of Thunder Pop. So my thunder take for you, Kenyon, Salo, you being a real life action star, you can appreciate cinematic action stars. One Tomas Cruise, Tom Cruise, aka Tom Cruise, well into his 50s now. I think he's like 50. I don't have it right in front of me, but he's 57. Does his own stunts as much as he possibly can. Also, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's an actual skydiver as well, like yourself. He pilots. He's a pilot. He pilots planes. He's a pilot as well. He flies planes, but does his own stunts. In fact, when they were trying to get him to come back to do Top Gun Maverick, the much anticipated, long awaited Top Gun Maverick that was delayed, like your speaking engagements was postponed due to the pandemic. When he was being vetted to come back and do more Top Gun, he said that only if I can fly the planes. That was the deal. He told Bruckheimer, I'll come back and do it, but only if I can fly the planes. This jump actually is one of the stunts on Mission Impossible, where he made a jump from one building to the next. I actually hurt himself on that jump, and it halted production for several months. Here's my thunder take, though, for you. When do you think enough is enough for Tom Cruise? And at his age, when does he need to dial it back? I know he wanted to fly a $70 million fighter jet for Top Gun Maverick. And they went back and forth with it for a long time. And finally, the Navy said, no, you're not going to fly our $70 million jet. By the way, you could argue which one is more valuable, the jet or Tom Cruise. Because actually, I mean, wrecking the jet being destroyed would be very expensive for the military. But also Tom Cruise would be a very expensive casualty for the movie industry. Because you could argue that he's as valuable to, especially in an era where the name above the title doesn't seem to be as important as it used to be. There was a time when that was everything in the movie industry, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, having those big names over the title, you know, Tom Cruise, having those big names over the title. But there's some actors that few and far between, but there's some actors today that still, you know, Tom Cruise, a Top Gun movie without Tom Cruise, probably not as successful. If you went and made more Top Gun, a good example of that was a few years ago, they made a Footloose movie. It was a remake, but you don't have Kevin Bacon. The movie doesn't do as well. Okay. So sometimes the name does, you know, is important. Another example, when they did the Cobra Kai series, the Karate Kid reboot, having Ralph Macchio for that show, very important. I think if you try to do Cobra Kai without Ralph Macchio, it's a big loss. There's Tom Cruise, which I don't think that's acting. I think that look on his face is like real, like intensity when he's flying that plane. But here's my thing. Do you think that maybe at some point, when is he going to be too old to do these stunts? Is he ever going to be too old?
I don't think any stunt person gets to the place where they're like, okay, I'm officially too old. Mm-hmm. I think it just comes down to that they stop doing them. And I was talking to some skydivers about this. I said, how do you know when you're done skydiving? Like, how do you know? Like, no. And then we realized that no skydiver ever says, this is the last skydive.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, hey, I'm going to get my reserve parachute repacked, get that repacked. And then all of a sudden you're like, you realize you went through the summer and you didn't jump. And then you're like, okay, because every 6 months you have to have it repacked. And so you think, okay, I'm going to get it packed again. And then all of a sudden another 6 months goes by and then you're kind of like, I guess I'm not doing that anymore. So yeah, I think it just comes down to the thing where it just kind of phases out. And that just happens in different parts of life. You phase out. I used to be a pro snowboarder. And then for 13 years, I didn't snowboard until my girlfriend was like, you need to get back on a snowboard. And I was like, okay. And all of a sudden I owned gear again and it was fun. But I didn't ever think I was going to phase out of snowboarding ever. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to do it for life.
Wow. Kind of like Tom Brady as a quarterback. I think he's just going to kind of phase out.
That's it.
He doesn't think he'll ever be, you know, done or finished. And probably
winning Super Bowls, you can't say that you're done.
No, that's why, you know, in the world of TV, and you could say, you know, people can say what they want about the person and whether he went about his business the right way in terms of how he handled the show and the departure from the show. But Jay Leno, more or less forced into retirement twice, both times number one in late night. He was still number one in late night when he made his last exit. He went ahead and stepped aside because the network wanted to go with younger, more social media friendly, YouTube friendly, viral video friendly, I guess. But Jay Leno had dominated and was number one in the ratings for late night TV. I don't think he ever slipped. Once he got number one, he never slipped. But still forced into retirement by the network. And that, I guess there's a lot of politics that goes on behind that and whatnot. So yeah, for that, you know, that's, now do you prefer the term motivation or inspiration when it comes to speak? Are you a motivational speaker or inspirational speaker?
I think inspirational is probably there. Yeah. Motivational inspiration is a vertical in the speaking world. Mm-hmm. So it's either one of those, really.
So during the pandemic, a lot of us had to pivot and make adjustments. You as well. You were talking about that. We were setting that up earlier. You were starting to have to figure out, what am I going to do? Is this going to come here to the States? COVID. And as it did come, you had to start making decisions on how you're going to adjust. Did you already kind of have the idea what your plan B was going to be? Or did you have to sit down and plan? And by the way, your plan B is that you built a state-of-the-art studio in your house and you started doing your keynotes remotely.
Well, you know, I think we all were like, oh, is this a couple of weeks? Is it a couple of months?
Right. Yeah.
But even then, I knew that virtual was coming. So that was part of it, regardless of the fact that COVID came and pushed it into the mainstream as fast as it did.
Yeah.
You know, it started with like, okay, well, I can't just use my webcam. That's 720p. That's horrendous. Like, yeah. And this is on a Mac, but I'm like, how do I get 1080 at least? So then it's like, okay, well, maybe I can use my DSLR. So I hook that up and then I, you know, take some of my old lights and I set those up. And it was a makeshift studio to begin with. And it wasn't what it is today, but I had to start somewhere. And then I basically said, all right, we got to build out a web page that says we do virtual events. And we got to put it up, just at least some video and some photo, and just show that we're putting effort into this. And then as it continued and I kept reassessing and I did interviews with different people in the industry to understand what was going on, always trying to have my finger on the pulse, and realized that this is going to go on for a while. And because of that, I was like, I'm just going to, and then it was actually in about November when I was like, that's it. We're going all in here.
Okay. Yeah.
And here's why I went all in. Because I realized that no matter what, once we get back to being live and people want to be together, they want to be in community, they want to be face-to-face, eventually we're going to do that and I'll be back on stage. Fine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But virtual's never going away now, because people now know they can use it. They know how to use it. They can use it. Companies are going to say, okay, smaller events, let's do virtual. This large national event, let's do it live. And it's really going to come down to people that can do both are going to win.
Yeah, more options. You were talking about how, you know, you were used to giving value when you would go to your live events. You're providing the light. You have these lights going. Your high energy, you bring in props, the ladder mainly. I'm sure you've had the things you bring in, but you have stuff going on in the back. You have a screen, stuff going on. I saw in some of the videos as well. So you're bringing a lot of production value to your live events. So I see what you mean when you were starting to say, okay, we're going to have to pivot to maybe doing something remotely. Just using a little web camera is not going to be enough. If you want to stay on brand and be able to continue to bring in that production value and bringing value to your audience.
Well, yeah, I had to learn. I mean, and a lot of speakers did, and a lot of entertainers, and we all had to learn, like, how are we going to do production from home? And like, people were like, oh, you're doing a virtual event. Is it half price? And it's like, no, it's 5 times, 10 times the work.
Yeah.
And Now it's, you know, the ability to go from slide to slide or from video back to camera to second camera to lights. I got disco lights in here for the end, for the EDM.
Yeah.
I got smoke. I got fog machine that goes off. I mean,
wow.
These are the little things, again, that a lot of speakers aren't willing to do. But at the end of the day, these are top paying clients, and I'm willing to give them what they expect and then some.
Mm-hmm. There was another clip I want to show. This is you with some sales team. I'll show a little bit of it here.
The sales industry is all about relationships and being as genuine as you can and bringing yourself to those who you're selling to. So Kenyon seemed like a perfect fit to inspire us during times when we really need it most to get out there and do our best.
And what if your desire to live fulfilled and to help others were able to help you personally and professionally? Would that be something that you're interested in?
Yes.
There we go. When you go into your customers and clients and you help them first, when you're focused on them and not your own sales numbers, the sale naturally happens. And I'm telling you, the sale will always be for more than it normally is because they like spending money with people they like. People don't buy products. People buy people.
People don't buy products. People don't buy people. I was thinking about this today after I watched that clip. There's still a lot of ways to make money, but maybe more now than you could argue. Maybe there's more now than there used to be, or I don't know, but it's very different though. Like the ways you can make money, you know, with social, being a social influencer, tech, the stock market, things like that, Bitcoin, but becoming viral video content creator. But sales is kind of the last of the old frontier that still works. Like if a person wants to get rich, and not that being rich is all the end all of end all, you know, having other things like, you know, love and happiness and contentment. But if you want to make money, sales is one of the old kind of frontiers that still works. It's always worked. You go into sales, and quickly, I mean, if you work hard over time, you can do really well. And so sales, sort of the old frontier that still works.
Sales is never going away.
Yeah.
Like we're always selling. Every person's selling. Everybody's promoting. These Instagram influencers are promoting. They're selling themselves. Everybody, including me, is always selling. That's what we have to do. That's how we stay in business.
True. Yeah. But the part that really knocked out of the park for me is that you really are, it's more important to the person to sell yourself than the product. If you sell yourself, the product will move.
Well, for sure. People want to do business that they have a great relationship with. So ultimately it's about the relationships.
So at the beginning of the pandemic, when I started kind of figuring out what my pivot was going to be, and I decided, and I had my my own events business, or I did weddings and proms, graduations as a DJ, and couldn't do that. Same as you, I couldn't do that because of, you know, live events weren't happening. I had this podcast, and I wanted to see where I could go with that and building that platform out because it was something that I really enjoyed doing and I loved. And so I landed at some point I landed on TikTok, which, by the way, you do really well on TikTok. You have built quite a following on TikTok. I got a clip I'm going to show of that here in a second. But I found TikTok, and I actually took the School of TikTok classes, and found, as I went along more and more, I found there's just a wild frontier out there of audience to mine for and to put more eyeballs on your content if you're willing to go out there and create content and find your audience. You could find your audience out there. But TikTok was kind of a thing that people thought was kind of silly. It was just for high school kids, lip syncing, dancing, but really there's some potential there to doing some things that are a little different. But what I did was, when I wanted to do TikTok videos, I went out and, like, I'm going to find who the five best TikTok people are, and I'm going to study what they're doing. And I'm sure you teach this. So when you decided you wanted to go into motivational speaking, were there motivational speakers that you went out and studied? Like, these are people that I'm going to study and kind of pick things I might like and try to mold my own version of it. Did you do any of that?
Well, I had been doing it over decades. So for me, and the success that I've had in the speaking industry was an overnight success in 10 or 20 years. It was one of those scenarios where back in the early 90s, I, you know, picked up Tony Robbins' cassette tape set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And wore out those cassette tapes and continued to learn in the DVDs and read the books and all the different types of books about leadership and body language and personality types and learning types and all the things over the years. And then had mentors along the way that took me under their wing and taught me how to be authentic on stage and my authentic mm-hmm. self. So, and comedy, you know, you had mentioned that earlier. I studied a lot of amazing comedy greats and watched a million different comedy things throughout my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when it was time to bring that all to the stage, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that now I'm going to bring in all that I've learned and then deliver it on stage.
Yeah. And that's one of the formulas of success. It's like, show me who the best of this, of whatever it is you want to do. Show me the best ones. I'm constantly trying to find who are the best podcasters, who are the best live streamers. And I'm always like taking in what, and I don't want to rip anybody off, but you take things from each of them and you kind of put your own self into it.
Sure.
Find a way to put your own self to it. So tell me about doing stand-up. Was that something you had an interest in doing, or was it just mainly your effort to do stand-up was just to hone your skills as a motivational speaker?
I remember being a teenager watching MTV's Half Hour Comedy Hour.
Yeah.
Like, that's the show I'd watch again and again and again. And, you know, obviously, way back in the 80s and 90s, there was no Netflix. There was no easy way to get your hands on comedy. So it was like someone had a VHS tape of, like, Eddie Murphy or something like that. And they're like, yeah, go ahead, watch this. You know, like, no way, it's so raw. Well, that's the name of it. But for me, I knew that I was going to have to apply comedy. And I do it on my own with my friends and my family. Yeah. And, you know, just in general, like, I think I'm a pretty funny person. But at the same time, understanding the art of comedy is really the brilliance. Like, what makes something funny? And there were two reasons that I studied it at this time. And so this was very applicable because I knew I was going to be on stage. Was, okay, who are the best comedians? Who do I resonate with? What type of comedy do I resonate with? And then I have to learn the, you know, okay, how will I do the setup, the delivery, and the punchline? And then how do you handle hecklers? And then, you know, the other shows, like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Watched a lot of that. So that improv.
Oh, is, I love that really show, yeah. Too.
So how does this apply once I finally got on stage? Where the key is that I always say that my inspiration or motivational keynote is fast progressing into a comedic personal development training, because there's just more humor all the time throughout this presentation. And comedy is one of the best things to keep the audiences going. So, okay, I had to learn. And so I was like, well, where do you go? What do you do? How do you learn? Well, Denver has the Denver Comedy Club, which is a pretty famous one. A lot of amazing people have come out of Denver.
Yeah.
And they did this thing, or they do this thing at the time, which is amateur night. And you have to get on the phone and you leave a voice recording of who you are. And you do this week in and week out until your name eventually rises to the top of the list. It's not random. It's just like a number of phone calls. It takes like 15 weeks just to get them. They're like, okay, and this week's comedians are gonna be, and then they give you a recording of like four or five names, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm on, and you get 2 minutes. That's it, just 2 minutes. Wow. And I prepped for that 2 minutes, and it was one of the scariest things I've ever done.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't mind skydiving and all this other stuff. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, comedy is so hard.
It is.
Look, in retrospect, I could go do 2 minutes like that. But to do those 2 minutes, and I did it about three or four times, I learned an immense amount, because comedy is about making people laugh every 15 seconds.
Wow.
And, but in my presentations now, it's so brilliant, because when I interact with the audience and somebody says something, especially sometimes people, they try and maybe get the higher ground on the speaker. Yeah. So they'll make a comment. And that is very similar to a heckler. And I have to be fast on my feet to be able to take back audience control and let the audience know I'm in charge. So if they say something and the audience laughs, I have to turn around and say something. Or sometimes you do a callback, so you wait a little bit, and then you do a callback and then take back control. So yeah, comedy is, it's a brilliant thing. I love studying it. I love watching people do it, and I love learning from them, even to this day.
You know, you mentioned hecklers. Hecklers was the original troll. Like, the, you know, before internet, before internet trolls.
That's right.
On threads. I'm just here to read the comments. But yeah, the heckler was the original version of that. I'm curious now. I mean, I've been to some comedy clubs to watch comedians. Obviously, it's been a while. It's been a year, more than a year. But I remember going to some comedy clubs a year and a half ago, but it was for like events, like fundraisers. So the people that were there, they were there. They had bought tickets. So it wasn't like a normal audience to go see a comedy night at this comedy club. It was more of an event. But I'm wondering now, because of the internet and because people are constantly just getting posting things on threads that are heckling people in whatever they're doing. And I'm wondering if people get that off their chest now on the internet, and maybe the heckling is not as bad for comedians, or is it just the same and it really hasn't made any difference? That's what I would be curious about.
I mean, it's very rare in events. You know, it's the one or two. You know, the difference is just that alcohol, right? That's where it's like, I don't expect to be heckled. And then there's someone in the audience that is like, well, I didn't expect to heckle someone until I had that fourth shot.
You know, as a DJ, me DJing, there's hecklers in the world of DJing. I had a guy get drunk one time and didn't like the music I was playing, decided to set one of my speakers on fire with a candle.
What the heck?
So, hey, it's like you said, it's all in the alcohol. It depends on how much alcohol consumption has happened. Now I got to talk about this. The Denver Broncos.
You ready? Let's go. Yeah.
TikTok. I love that one. That's where I fall in front of like 60,000 people. It's one of my favorite ones. I love that one.
And I read a description of like the easy light tiptoe hitting the ground, but sometimes it's not the easy tiptoe hitting the ground. But
you never know. I mean, the thing is that we've got cable cam cables, we have field goal cables, and we have high performance parachutes. We're the only ones that jump into the stadium with high performance parachutes. And we have to do this turn and go through these cables at like 50 miles an hour. But sometimes the wind is coming from different directions and then it swirls in the stadium. And we're coming in hot. And when we come in hot, I'd set it down like, oh, skidding, everything's working. And then all of a sudden it's like, it could just catch your shoe a little bit. You're just like, boop. You know, but it doesn't happen often, but every now and then I'm just like, all right, but that one was just like, wham, and it just was like, that's the way it was. That was one of my favorite jumps though.
When you guys skydive all the time to an empty field, maybe to practice or to run through new equipment. I'm just kind of making, but when you do the stadium, and I saw the shots, and by the way, if I ever need to buy new GoPro equipment, this is the guy to talk to. I'm sure you know everything there is about action cameras.
Got a lot of cameras.
A lot of action cameras. You've got them on you. You're getting good angles. You see them coming in. So we see the bird's eye view as you're coming down on at the Denver Broncos Stadium. And is it the intensity has to be ramped up for you
for sure. So like, we get to the stadium, above the stadium at 5,000 feet, about 15 minutes before the game, before the time that we jump. Sometimes it's longer, 20, 25 minutes. But anyways, we circle and circle and circle. And the whole time we're circling, we're getting wind readings from the rim of the stadium. Because that's what's really important. So there's a guy at the rim of the stadium up in the light rack. And he's like, hey, guess what? It's 10 miles an hour out of the south. It's 5 miles an hour out of the east now. Or it's 15 miles, you know. And so they're giving us all these wind readings.
Wow.
And then we have to manage everything else that happens. We have 3 minutes from when we exit the plane to everybody being on the field, which that's not too hard because we have to exit. We time it. The plane flies over just at the right time. The music starts. We jump out the plane. But yeah, we're feeling it in the plane. And then when we're out there and it's go time, it's just, it kind of happens. It's just, you know, it's just happening. You don't have a choice. Eventually that parachute's going to come down to the ground. Might as well be in the stadium. And, but yeah, when you make that last, you know, 1200 feet, you're crossing the field and then you make that high performance turn and now you're driving down the stands and you make the turn to go down the field. And we just never know what's going to happen because those winds at the rim, like all of us have had something that's happened. So like half the parachute collapses for a second and then it reinflates and then you got to readjust and now the wind's behind you, but because it's swirled in the stadium, then it's in front of you. And so you're just constantly adjusting. And what I always say is that our job is like golf because we have to be able to like, okay, what's the wind reading? Okay, a little bit this way, slice it that way. But then we have to update in microseconds. So whenever something changes in microseconds, like, oh, that happened, now adjust here, now adjust this way, oh, okay, and set it down. And one time I was coming in, it was Monday Night Football, and I'm coming down the field, and I'm like, what? People aren't supposed to be on the field. And the Monday Night Football guys had come out onto the field. Oh. Like the announcer dudes.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I have to thread the needle here. So I have to go between one of my teammates and they know not to move. So they know that I know where they are. And if they're standing there, I'm not going to hit them. But these other guys, I don't know if they're going to move or not, but I now I'm going. And so I have to thread between like four people, slide and stop before the military color guard. And then my parachute sets down. I'm in the end zone. I wave to the crowd. And I was just thinking that was intense. And one of my teammates, and this wasn't supposed to happen either, but we have the Broncos horse that runs down the field.
Yeah.
The horse didn't get off the field in the time. Oh, and no. He came in and he was like going along with the horse. And people thought it was part of the show, but he didn't expect a horse to be on the field.
Be awesome as if you had landed and on top of the horse and then rode off on the horse.
That's right. Well, there was somebody on the horse.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't just randomly running.
Okay. They don't just pull the horse around like a little bit of a rope or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Thunder. Thunder's the name of the horse.
Thunder's the horse. Now, were the Bronco games, because of COVID this year, were they limited capacity? Were they no capacity? I know every city was different. No capacity.
So, I think at one point they're allowing like 5,000 people. We didn't jump this year.
Yeah. So you didn't get to jump.
They were like, no jumping, which I understand. Totally cool. Yeah. And we're looking back to for next year.
You feel a little withdrawal a whole football season of missing the jumps?
Gosh. It's like, it's such a thing because we also get to stay for the games and it's a little celebrity status. You know, people like, they see you. Absolutely. I mean, what happens is you have those funny orange jumpsuits. And people either recognize you and they're like, oh my gosh, the skydivers, can you take a photo with us?
Yeah.
Or they're drunk and they're like, nice onesie, buddy. That's a sick onesie. And you're like, oh my God, like whatever.
Either way, you know, it's still, it's a different way of acknowledging and appreciating.
Sure.
It's still a level of fandom. Well, next year, and we hope it's September, late August, September, that you're able to resume and we'll put that thought out there. People are going to go so mad when you guys come back after a year on the shelf.
Sure.
The crowd's just going to go. I mean, they're going to be so happy just to be there and be back to full capacity as well. So it's not going to be just for that. But I mean, your team, we see you on national TV and the NFL game, the NFL games will show you the pregame and I'm nationally known. Jump team here. Definitely. It's a big deal. Super Bowl. So you guys got to do the Super Bowl because the Broncos were in the Super Bowl. Two Super Bowls, as a matter of fact.
I wish we did.
Oh, you didn't do the Super Bowl.
We get to do the Super Bowl. But yeah, we've had we've had national interviews, CBS this morning.
Yeah.
Lots of different types of hype because again, yeah, we are one of, you know, each one of us is one of five members that jumps into the stadium and we're the only team associated with an NFL football team. So there are the Red Bull guys and they jump in a game here or there. There are military people that jump in. Mm-hmm. There is another skydive team, which has lots of people for demonstrations, mm-hmm. but we're the only team that is allowed to jump in, especially with cables. We're the only team that jumps in with cable cam cables signed off to be able to navigate those. And yeah, it's a pretty special deal. And once you get on the team, most people don't ever want to leave.
No, I would imagine it's a gig you don't want to leave anytime soon.
Yeah, it's like being on the Blue Angels. Like those slots don't open up very often.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you're like maybe Tom Cruise, and then you get to fly one of those.
If you want a celebrity guest to sit in with you and do that, maybe Tom Cruise would be a bad option. Now, that you know, with that being said, did you get to do the playoffs though? Did you get to do the AFC Championship game?
That was our biggest game, was the AFC Championship game against the New England Patriots.
Okay. Yeah. So you have done at least it was one of the playoffs, not the Super Bowl.
Tremendous. Tremendous.
There's so much going on in the Super Bowl games. Even this year when it was limited capacity, they had it down in Tampa Bay. I'm sure it would have been hard to bring you all in to do that during a Super Bowl game when they had these.
Well, I think, and if I remember correctly, that particular year, you know, most Super Bowls are in closed stadiums, the roofs are closed.
Oh, that's so true. Good point.
Often that you have, you know, they had that one in New York, the Giants Stadium, and then they had the Tampa, which is open and things like that. But a lot of the, sometimes the stadiums that are closed.
When you're up there, does it go by so fast? I mean, does any, are any, is anything going through your head other than what you're actually doing? Like when you're making a jump?
Well, when we're circling the stadium, a lot of us are pretty chill. You know, we're just like, we're hearing the calls, we're hearing the counts, we're hearing the things, the information we need. What's this? What's that? What's going on? If you know, I mean, there are some times where there are thunderstorms everywhere, but over the stadium, and then we land, and then like 10 minutes later, it's complete downpour and lightning, and they're like, hey, everybody has to leave the stands. And we're like, wow, that was close. But we can't jump outside of parameters. So we have rules and parameters that we must abide by, wind and clouds and level. And we do that. The thing is that the angst or anxiety or you know, all that is in the plane.
Yeah.
The second that we exit the airplane, and I know this is for everybody, it's just like go time. So you know, and sometimes I'll see certain things like, wow, look at all the traffic right now. Big traffic jam. So that will pass my mind for a quick second. Or like, oh my gosh, the sunset is so beautiful. Like this is such a great sunset right now. So those things, you know, are kind of part of it. But for the most part, it is once you've exited the plane, then it is the point of no return. And you just know that you have the ability to do what you've been hired to do.
Mm-hmm. How fast can someone go out and learn how to skydive? Like what is it? Is it just like driving a car? It depends on the person. Some people are naturals and they pick it up really quick. Other people, it takes a little longer.
For sure. For sure. You know, with the invention of the indoor skydiving wind tunnels, people are able to pick it up quicker, where you can go and do 10 or 15 minutes of tunnel time.
Yeah.
And then you, then when you're learning in the student program, you actually know how to fly your body. That's the hardest part. Some people know what their fingertips or what their toes are doing, and other people have no idea what parts of their body are doing. And it's the people that know spatial awareness in the sky that learn faster. But you can go, if you got the time, you can become a skydiver in a week. And look, this means that it's just enough that you don't need instructors or, you know, or coaches. You have 25 jumps.
Right.
It's still a lifetime of learning. I'm still learning to this day. And that's 22 years later and 7,000 skydives.
So there's things you still, you're like, oh, this is a better way to land. Or this is a better way to, It's a little, it sounds like when you were describing it there for a moment, it almost sounded like dancing.
Sure.
A little bit. It's like a different kind of dancing.
You just, you need to, it's spatial awareness. Like, some people can do a backflip and they know where they are in space.
Oh yeah. I love it when they do the backflips. Yeah.
Have no idea how to do a backflip and they're straight to their head.
Yeah. I love it when I see the people doing the acrobatics in the air, doing the backflips and stuff. I got to show this before we get, we're going to get onto agree or disagree here. And I'm so many things I want to ask you about this. I'm going to have you again sometime just to all the list of questions I had. I had post-its like stacked up like this. Things to ask you. I'm going to show this real quick. Yeah. How did you get, that's cool by the way, but how did you get into TikTok? Like, where did that come about? Was that because of the pandemic or did you find it other ways?
No, I mean, it was slightly before I got, it was October of 2019, first week in November. And I, you know, look, I had Gary V, if you don't get on TikTok, you're missing the boat. You know?
Yes, I just watched that the other day.
Right now it's Clubhouse and that's the big thing. But so I went to my daughter who had been on Musical.ly long before it was TikTok.
Yeah.
So my daughter had been a part of Musical.ly for years. And then I was like, hey, guess what? I'm going to open a TikTok account. She's like, no, no. And I was like, yes. And she was like, no, it's not for you. And I was like, watch. And look, I didn't know that it was going to build towards 1 million followers, but I hit it at just the right time because it was just prior to the pandemic when everybody else got on. Yeah. So I had built a decent following of hundreds of thousands by the time that the masses came in and then whoosh. But, and it's evolved. Like the videos that I once posted are not, they're no longer the best videos anymore. People want to be entertained. They want personalities. And I will move into more of that over the spring and summer. But now what's fun is when my kids say, like my daughter says, oh, this boy I like follows you on TikTok, or friends will text them and be like, your dad's so cool. He's on TikTok. Like, I love his videos. He's the best. Like, so it was a little bit of that awesomeness that like, if I had a video go viral, mm-hmm. my kids would get recognition from their friends.
Yeah.
That was worth it because, you know, the hype for them was cool.
Yeah, it's a whole new way of getting street cred for sure.
For sure.
You were talking about earlier about people that you'd study and Anthony Robbins, who probably in modern times is the godfather of motivational speaking, I would think, since the last 40 years. If there's anybody that you could sit down with tomorrow and pick their brain about anything that you have questions about, who would it be? One person.
And Richard, this is kind of Virgin Records, Richard Branson.
Why so? Done. Why him?
I read a lot of his books and, you know, back in the day it was about, I would have these virtual mentors. So Tony Robbins, Richard Branson, I read the Starbucks books about how that happened. I just read all these books of these people that built these amazing things. But Richard Branson, I connected to the most because here's a guy that he started with records. And then he was like, look, I can brand everything. And you know, I can do airlines. And people are like, how are you going to go up against British Airways? And he's like, I got this. And then, yeah, he had successes and yeah, he had failures. But while he was doing all that, he was like, hey, me and my buddy are going to get in in a balloon and we're going to try and circumnavigate the globe at the same time. And he had to bail out and land in the ocean and get picked. Like, just these amazing stories.
Yeah.
So yeah. Here's this adventurer, solid entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And now he's this guy that lives on his Necker Island. Mm-hmm. And when the hurricanes came, he was like, look, I'm going to help the local communities. And he would go and he would help and he would spend not his money, but his time. He would open his doors and he would take care of his staff and he would help the communities. And I was like, yeah, that guy gets it. He gets life. And for him, it's not about the money. The money's there, but it's for him. He knows it's about the relationships with people. And I would like to pick his brain.
That's cool. I think you'll get to do it someday. I'm going to put that thought out there to the universe.
Appreciate it.
I guess that we get to do that. All right. We're going to get into agree or disagree on this 140th episode with Kenyon Salo, the Thunder Pop Dome, coming to you remotely via
I'm ready
live stream. put some music, put our Agree to Disagree music to work here. All right. There's the little agree to disagree music. Okay, number one on Agree to Disagree. We know we're going to get Stranger Things 4 this year, finally. Much delays because of COVID. They had, I think, 3 delays during the production. It was supposed to have been done a long time ago, but finally they're wrapped up. It's going to be coming out this year sometime. The Demogorgon, the infamous Demogorgon, the monster, which I have decided is going to be my Halloween costume next year. I've got to get the photos with me in the Demogorgon costume. I think that's this. My son's gonna love it. Okay, so Demogorgon. There's a theory going on around right now on social media that Stranger Things 4 might reveal that the Demogorgon is more than just a monster, like B-movie-like monster. It may actually be a morph of one of the characters. So possibly, this is just a theory again on the web, but I want to see if you agree or disagree with this idea. Will, the boy who has been terrorized through multiple seasons by the Demogorgon and the underworld, there's a theory that the Demogorgon is Will coming back time travel from the future, that Will had became the Demogorgon in the future. And so all these weird thoughts and memories that Will has that he can't figure out where they came from may actually be memories of his future turning into the Demogorgon. Do you agree or disagree with this possible theory?
I'm going to go agree. Here's why. I like the depth of it, that it's not just some physical being.
Yeah.
But it's like, what do we fear the most, right? I think we fear our own thoughts and our own stories we make up and our own challenges and our own things that have happened in our life that have scarred us and that we've had to work through. Yeah, makes sense to me.
And it would be a little bit of a flip because the first 3 seasons have gotten by on being
upside down flip.
Yeah.
No flip. No pun intended.
No, yeah, exactly. No flip. The flip. But it's gotten by on just being kind of like the monster is the baddie. The kids are the good guy. Very 80s. And that was it. But it's seems like maybe now they might peel the layer back a little bit, the onion back a little bit in the 4th season. There might turn out to be a big reveal.
Well, how are those kids going to feel if they have to battle their own friend?
Yeah. Oh, it adds a whole new layer.
I don't think Stranger Things, people don't want to see another monster. We're, you know, great.
Yeah. Roll out the same thing that you did the first 3 seasons, the underworld, the flip side or whatever. And then the monster of the week and whatever.
The upside down.
The upside down.
That's the flip side. I'll see you in the upside down.
Yeah, catch you on the upside down. Literally.
Literally.
Number two, you had mentioned that you watched Beyonce's doc over on Disney Plus.
Yes.
The Beyonce.
But it was on Netflix before that.
You know, I think I forgot about
Homecoming. It was Homecoming on Netflix.
That was originally on Netflix. That's right. Yeah, before it went to Disney Plus. So here's my question for you. One of the power couples of the entertainment industry, Jay-Z, Beyonce. And there's only, I mean, you could probably name 5 power couples. One of them would have been Kanye and Kim Kardashian. Unfortunately, now we hear they're filing for a divorce. But another one of the power couples, definitely Jay-Z and Beyonce. Here's an idea for you. Do you agree or disagree with my pitch? The variety shows that were so big for so many years, with like the Sonny and Cher was kind of the quintessential couple that did a variety show. Later, we had Nick and Jessica Simpson. They had a variety show, which was kind of off the back of their reality show success. What do you think about this idea? Should you agree or disagree that there should be a Jay-Z Beyonce? It's time for a Jay-Z Beyonce variety show.
Disagree.
Don't like the idea?
Disagree.
Nope.
Well, here's the thing is that part of their success is built on the mystery where there's just enough and you get these peaks into their relationship, peaks into their business, the peaks into their work ethics, like they did for Homecoming, but then they're reserved. There's a type of power couple that it's not about being in the limelight every second of the day. It's like, you know, it's like Michelle and Barack Obama. I could never see them doing a variety show because they're just, I don't know, they're up on that pedestal, and I think the variety show takes them down a step.
But kind of almost sort of cheapens the the brand of, I won't say brand, but whatever the term, better term would be.
We're looking for the insight into that part of their world.
Yeah.
Right. We're looking like we're inspired by them, which is why I watched Homecoming so many times, because I was so inspired by her work ethic and what she did and the whole reasoning she did it and how she would practice and train and practice and train. And it's like, well, no wonder you're as good as you are and you make as much money and you're as popular and people like you because you care about other people.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's how I want to learn about those power couples.
All right. Number three, another great show that I know you watch, Narcos. Mm. Also over at Netflix, had a spinoff as well. I'm going to pitch an idea, another idea for you and see if you agree or disagree with this idea. I'm going to do a share screen on this. Okay, to show you the article that brought this up. This idea, actually, not my idea. I can't take for credit for it. It was actually in this article, but I kind of started to kind of build off of it after I read it. Show you here. This lady here, she was a... Go ahead here. Stranger Thing. Okay, no. Narcos. Griselda Blanco was a key figure of the Medellin cartel before Escobar made a name for himself. She was nicknamed the La Madrina, which is a Spanish for the godmother. She even named her son Michael Corleone after Al Pacino's fictional character in The Godfather. Blanco was known to knit brassieres that were designed in the manner that would enable women to smuggle cocaine in them. So get this. In the early 70s, she moved from Colombia to New York, where she oversaw a huge distribution network. When the government nearly arrested her, she fled back to Colombia, only to resurface in Miami in the 80s. Among the most shocking things she did was shooting her husband dead. She also loved taking out enemies. This is the good part. She also loved taking out, and the terrible part as well, she also loved taking out enemies by sending gunmen on motorcycles. Ironically, she was killed by a motorcycle gunman too, which really, if there was ever a proof that what goes around comes around, you send out people to gun down people on motorcycles, that's probably going to come back and boomerang back to you. Someone's going to send a gunman on a motorcycle to come back and get you. But here's my pitch. And here was the pitch from this article. They proposed giving this woman her own narco series, Griselda, the Queen Pin, you call it Griselda, you call it Narcos, the Queen Pin. But what about a female protagonist led narco spinoff based on this woman? Would that be interesting?
Absolutely agree. Yeah. I think it'd be a strong show.
I have a couple actresses I thought of. One was Fast and the Furious's Michelle Rodriguez.
Of course.
Would be interesting playing this role. I thought about Jennifer Lopez, but then I was like, maybe she's just a little bit too glamorous.
For the
part.
Need more raw. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to have that belief that somebody is just ruthless.
Yeah. And I thought Michelle Rodriguez could do that.
It could be an unknown character too. An unknown.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how the original Pablo Escobar, you know, Narcos, you know, that they, you're like, who are these actors? But they were so good. They were so good. I didn't know, you know, I love clicking on a show and then all of a sudden thinking like, oh, I'm in this now, especially when I don't know the characters. Sometimes that's even better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So fingers crossed, maybe someone sees that article. That was off a Screen Rant, by the way, that had put that on their article there as an idea. And I loved it. I was like, I'm going to run this by you and see what you think. The James Bond of motivational speaking right here. Thoughts and advice. I've got something that I could do, but if I can't imagine when I've got the James Bond of motivational speaking sitting virtually right next to me, seems like I should let you do the thoughts and advice if I can talk you into doing it to close out the show.
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, great. Oh, wonderful. Okay. I'll step back. This is all yours.
Well, when it comes down to thoughts and advice, ultimately, if someone says, you know, how do you want to close the show? How do you want to part ways? Or any last things you want to leave with anybody that's listening, watching, having this experience? Ultimately, really what I believe are there three things in life that really help us, A, be happy, and B, really feel like we're fulfilled, that we're fired up, that life is working for us. And those three things are very, very simple. First is, we have to say yes, yes to creating more experiences. So when we say yes and we let the how figure itself out later, the experiences that we have, we never look back on them and say, I wish I didn't have that experience. Just the story that makes us feel alive inside. And from experiences, we move to stories. We have to share more stories. And that's what these podcasts, that's what these shows are about. You're doing an amazing job sharing the stories of so many individuals. And those stories are applicable and they inspire people and they help people. And it's really a big deal. And that's why life is all about stories. So sharing more stories is the second one. And third, it's why I really like individuals that desire to help others. When we get to live more fulfilled by helping others. And when you help others without the expectation of return, everything you desire will come back tenfold. So that's about community. So start with creating experiences, share as many stories and learn as many stories as possible, and ultimately live more fulfilled by helping others first. And then that's where the happiness comes from, because we're focusing on others and not ourselves. And that's what I believe in life. And that's what I share from the stage. And that's what I live 365, 24/7.
I love it.
Yeah.
Before we close out, I wanted to we had a couple, some of our comments from earlier. We didn't get those in earlier, but Maureen was in response to the weather video I showed her at the beginning of the show. She gave us this. She said, I hope you and your family are okay. We are. We did lose power for 3 days. We were without water for a couple of days. There were people that did much, as you can see from that video, there were people that were doing much worse. We were very lucky. We were very lucky. We had friends that that had power, that let my wife and son go stay with them for a couple of days. So they could have some warmth. I stayed back at the house and I did some camping at the house and covered myself with a lot of blankets so I could keep an eye on the pipes. We had Facebook users said Penny Dreadful has an awesome intro. Do you know that one? Penny Dreadful? I'm going to go find it now. We had another Facebook user said, what about the cartoon intro to National Lampoon's Christmas? Yes, completely yes. Random. Doesn't make sense. Still love it. Oh yeah.
Randomness is perfection.
Yeah. No. Yeah. When you hit it with the random. Also, I love the Avengers opener and they use it on all the Marvel shows. It has that triumphant music and they do the comic strip illustrations. Yeah. And it's like dun da da dun da dun dun da dun da. I get goosebumps still when that plays. It's like dun da da dun da dun. I love it. I love it. Kenyon, I can't thank you enough, man. It's so much fun talking to you and catching up. I want to ask you before we go, when do you think we're going to get you back out on the keynote circuit?
Q3. Yep. We're August, September. There's already live events that are booking.
I love it. I feel it. I feel it in my bones. We're going to make it happen.
We're going to do Broncos again. Yeah, it's all going to happen right perfect there. End of summer, beginning of fall.
Get you back out at the Broncos games. I'll come down. You get back in that stadium. I'm come down and watch a game. I've seen the stadium, by the way. I've driven by it. I've never been in the stadium. It's really cool where it's set up, how you just come up, you look up over there at it. I got gas at the gas station, Caddy Quarter, I think, from it as a convenience store over there. And I was like, oh, there's I didn't even know I was that close to it. I look over. It's like, oh, there's the stadium. It's right there. It was not during football season, though. It was like in the summer. Well, thank you so much, man. Enjoyed having you. It's just been a blast talking to you. And like I said, we'll get you back out there and we're going to do all those things. Kenyon, say hello, ladies and gentlemen. So much fun. Okay, we're going to hit that close out. Everyone out there, have a good day, hour, second, millisecond. Later. Okay. Outro. I know you're here. There you go. All right.
Thunder Pop is a Hit the Bricks production.
Hit the bricks! Hit the bricks!
Bye-bye.